Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, brought to you each week by University Hospital, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. We've been enjoying and fascinated by a conversation with Dr. Ross Moquin, who is a retired commander from the Navy and now working at Upstate and University Hospital. This has really been a fascinating discussion to me. As we left off, we had soldiers who have returned to the United States from, they're now at Bethesda and Walter Reed, and that's where you were for this last, for the second Gulf War. Once they got there, you're an orthopedic surgeon, you're a neurosurgeon. What kinds of surgeries were you doing?
Well, I'm a board certified neurosurgeon who has done training in orthopedics. And mostly because I was professor and of spinal surgery for the military. Most of the procedures I got were spinal procedures. Though when I was on call and someone with a brain injury came in, I would take care of them as well. But we would work together between the orthopedics and the neurosurgery service, and we would reconstruct spines as they were needed and treat the spinal cord injuries of those service members that unfortunately had paralysis.
And so when you're talking about spinal cord surgery, do you consider that to be spinal or do you consider that to be neuro?
It's one of the things we were doing at Walter Reed and the military is kind of combining the two disciplines. We're training more surgeons now to take the truths and the knowledge of orthopedic surgery and the knowledge of neurosurgery and putting them together to better treat patients with spinal cord injuries. There's a great movement now to do more collaboration, and there's even a group called One Spine where everyone's trying to work together. And what I'm very proud of is some of the leaders in this movement are actually graduates or either graduated from the residency program at Walter Reed or Bethesda or actually were faculty members there. So I think the military is leading the charge into unifying spinal surgery.
Well, you know, I guess I do think of them as being very tied together, but if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is that the culture of medicine has not been that they've been one thing, and that's kind of shifting?
That's correct.
This is really a big culture question anyway, isn't it? I know, as I mentioned in our first segment, my husband's retired from the Air Force, and he loves nothing more than to be in a room full of other retired military people or even current military people using all his acronyms, which almost comes across as a whole separate language. And I imagine you've had the same experience.
Yes. Both my wife and I say that our culture of origin is the military. And I grew up in the military, and we spent our entire adult life in the military. And it is very comforting to be around people who with shared experiences and been to different same places. And it really is true. We're a band of brothers and sisters.
That's great. Now, when you're home, do you speak with all those acronyms?
Actually, yes. Last night at dinner, my wife and I were having discussions, and we frequently use military terms.
You did. And are your kids then being raised on acronyms?
They understand them. None of our children are interested in, except one is interested, may be interested in the military, but they certainly grew up on bases.
But we digress. I want to go back to this conversation about the neurosurgery and the orthopedic surgery. I do know that there tend to be, even from the space program or from the military, there are parts of medicine that are actually picked up from things that are developed by the military, by the space program. What are some of the things that you developed or that you saw being developed while you were in the Navy that are now being used for civilian populations?
One of the biggest things right now is the aggressive use of craniectomies in brain injury patients.
All right, so a craniectomy would be?
Where we actually remove a portion of the skull to allow the brain to swell without having being confined by the closed box of the skull. We're finding that when the guys would be hit by an IED, they'd have massive brain swelling. If we took the skull off and left it off, the brain was able to recover more effectively or more fully than if we placed the skull back on. Historically, we would take the piece of the skull off, do the repairs that were needed, and then place the skull back on. But the big problem was brain swelling afterwards. The other corollary of that is we have a means now of using computerized tools, CT scans, to actually make the replacement scalp or the replacement skull piece that we didn't have years ago. This is now being used in the civilian world as well.
All right. I want to make sure I understand, because this almost sounds science fiction to me, although, as again, I find it very fascinating. So a soldier would be injured. You would remove his skull because his brain was going to swell.
Right. That would be actually, that procedure would be done at the combat support hospital, done in the zone.
In the zone. All right. Now, 48 hours later, that soldier is back in the United States without the skull.
That's correct.
How long do you leave the skull off?
It depends on what other things are going on, but usually 3 to 6 months.
Months.
Sometimes to a year.
All
yes.
Right. And now when the brain has, what, healed or is at least on its way to healing, you create a new skull out of what?
We actually get CT scans, and then the areas that are gone, we're able to actually use that image data and create a plastic plate to fill the void that's shaped exactly like the other side is shaped.
All right, and so now you place it back on the head of the soldier?
Correct.
What, stitch up all the...
We actually are able to secure it with screws and plates, and then that he has a normal cosmetic result.
That is amazing. And then how long is it before he's healed from that, or she?
Usually it just takes 2 weeks or so for the scalp to heal, as long as everything else is normal.
And so, what, 8 months or 10 months later, is that soldier of normal capacity, or at least, I mean, tell me how it comes across for the soldier. What is the soldier's experience?
What they have is a better cosmetic result.
Okay.
They look normal. They don't have a divot or a opening in their skull.
Mm-hmm.
But how they do totally depends on what sort of brain injury they had.
That would make sense.
And that doesn't treat, placing the skull back on does not treat the brain injury, but it... removing the skull allows the brain to heal better than what we used to do.
So their outcome is going to be better than if you had not removed the skull.
Yes.
Obviously. How is that being translated now to a civilian population?
Well, we're doing the same things here at Upstate, where we're being very aggressive about removing and leaving off skull flaps in patients who have brain injuries or who have strokes, or even sometimes when tumors swell.
That's amazing. So there are patients here in Central New York who have gone without their skull for a period of time and
yes,
and have found better outcomes because of it. Absolutely fascinating. Were there any other outcomes from your service?
Well, we were translating the same computer-generated modeling or computer-generated imaging to help with some of the spinal reconstruction surgery that I'm doing. We're actually making models of some very interesting deformities, scoliosis and kyphosis.
What's kyphosis?
A forward tilting or a twisting of the spine.
I see.
And that has helped us in surgeries. I'm starting to get that program going here.
Excellent.
In Upstate, but we did that extensively at Walter Reed.
Excellent.
Another thing that we did in the military that I think holds promise for the Central New York area is telemedicine.
In what way?
Because there's now a doctor shortage in Upstate New York, and there's a lot of people in a lot of different areas, I think the reach of physicians can be increased by the use of telemedicine.
Absolutely. We've heard about telemedicine in other capacities, but it sounds to me like you were maybe using it about longer distances than we might be talking about in Central New York.
Yes, we used to use it. Walter Reed and Bethesda were hubs of telemedicine throughout the whole world, actually centers, I would say. I was both myself and some of my colleagues, we would be helping general surgeons do craniotomies or brain operations on soldiers in different regions. Also, when I was on the ship, I would actually be able to take care of patients in my own clinics back at home by the use of telemedicine.
That's fabulous. Did you leave a legacy?
Yes, I was one of the first neurosurgeons, probably the first neurosurgeon in the military to really specialize in spinal reconstruction and complex spinal issues. And I know my trainees frequently tell me about operations they've done that are very similar to what I've taught them. So I think neurosurgeons doing more spinal reconstructions and more complex spinal operations, I think, is my legacy.
That is just fabulous. What did they have a name for them?
Oh yeah, they would describe them as Mokwin procedures.
There you go. So you have your name on a kind of surgery. Yes. That is a great legacy. I think that's terrific. Do you miss it?
Very much so.
Do you?
Yes.
What do you miss the most?
I miss the camaraderie, everyone working together for a cause bigger than ourselves. And for most of the military, anytime it's the mission first and people second. I mean, we're all want to make sure that the mission is done and then everybody gets home safely. And it's just this bond that everybody has with each other that is what I miss.
Well, I can understand that because it really is a culture. It's a lifestyle, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Do you still work with the armed services at all?
Yes, I'm very much privileged to be taking care of a number of the service members from Fort Drum.
You do?
Yes.
And are you doing neurosurgery and spinal surgery type
yes.
cases with them?
Yes.
Hopefully you don't have to do too many of them. I'd like to think that they were safe at Fort Drum. Well, Dr. Ross Mokwin, or should I say Commander Mokwin, what a special treat to have you with us here this morning in recognition of Veterans Day. We appreciate your sharing a Sunday morning with us. And listeners, if you're interested in seeing a picture of the unit patch Dr. Mokwin wears on his white coat, we've put a photo of it on our HealthLink On Air website, along with a description of the symbolism. I hope you have the opportunity to take a look. And we do need to take a break now, but it won't be long before we return. This is University Hospital's HealthLink On Air on 570 WSYR.